Introduce yourself, please.
My name's Susan Weigel. I'm the Kansas Senate President. I'm from Wichita. I'm running for re-election in East Wichita. But I'm also working with a number of Senate candidates all over Kansas who are Republican, who've come up with the Kansas Better Plan.
Well, I got to tell you, that's going to raise a lot of questions with me. But first, we're going to hear the open. This is Statehouse Blend. I'm Sam Zeff. We're using coffee and donuts to help us better understand the historic legislative session underway in Topeka. The issues and the people in the Kansas legislature. Here we go. And joining Susan and me in the KCUR 89.3 production studio is my brand new KCUR colleague, Barb Shelley, who's also writing for The Pitch. Barb, nice to see you back at this table.
Nice to be here.
All right, my list of topics to cover with you, Susan Weigel, is huge, but we start with my two favorite questions on Statehouse Blend. Tell me about your family and your pets.
Okay, I used to have a lot of pets because I had children. My husband had... It's our second marriage for both of us. We had three children when we married from his first marriage, and then we added four. Seven kids, 14 grandchildren. They were just at my house, a lot of them, for a huge international wedding. So we hosted a bunch of people from Australia and Germany, from around the world, for a wedding for a niece who is a citizen of Switzerland and a citizen of the United States, and she married a young man from Australia. So we had I just came from a huge weekend party before we had this press announcement at my house.
Well, you look bright-eyed and bushy-tailed despite the big weekend. The list of topics that I want to cover with you is huge, but I want to start with Barb Shelley. Before we start with before we get to Barb, though, I want to say that this is a mostly native Pennsylvania show.
Susan was born
in Allentown. Barb was born in Pottstown.
I
spent 17 years in Philadelphia, so I don't know if we should cover any Pennsylvania. I mean, we got a lot of Kansas things to talk about, but if any Pennsylvania topics crop up, I'm perfectly willing to talk about those.
I think we're a little more versed in Kansas right now.
All right, then we'll stay right here in the Midwest. Yeah. Barb Shelley, what's on your mind for Susan Weigel?
Okay, well, as you know, it's been a big week over in Topeka, and we received news of a deepening budget deficit, I think $60 million in the first quarter now. And then you took an action yesterday that's being portrayed either as a bold move or a brazen campaign step, or maybe both, depending on who's talking. Can you tell us about that?
It was a bold move, Barb, because what we said was that the legislature wants to take a more active role in the budget process. As you know very well in Kansas, we are a citizen legislature. Most of us have jobs back home, and we have commitments back home. And when we run for office, we commit to work in Topeka for 90 days. The session is a short 3-month session, and in the past, the legislature in Kansas has always taken a back seat on the budget issues. We come in, and usually during the second week of session, the governor, it doesn't matter who is governor, the governor gives us the budget the second week, and then we have some short hearings starting the third week and the fourth week, and we bring everybody in. And what the Kansas legislature usually does, no matter who is governor, is we rubber stamp, for the most part, that budget. And, you know, we have three branches of government that should be independent. There's the legislative branch, the executive branch, and the judicial branch. We just want to take a bigger role in budgeting. We want to have a year-long committee that meets at least quarterly. We want to craft our own budget to balance against the executive branch's budget. It doesn't matter who's governor, but clearly when we left in May, that budget balanced, and we're in the red right now, and it's time for the legislature to be more activist and produce our own budget.
Yeah, I mean, you have to get involved in budget details anyway, but usually when you're playing defense, right?
Oh, we've always been playing defense. And, you know, with the limited time we have, you know that our committee hearings last 1 to 2 hours, and that just we just need more tools. We need more in-depth hearings. We need to scrutinize spending in a far aggressive manner. So what we're going to do is we're going to look at it all year long. We're going to look at the economic forecasts. Part of the reason we're in the hole is because our revenue estimates that we thought the money that was coming in just didn't come in. So we're clearly in a slump. But we just need to take a greater role in the budget process, and that's our plan.
Susan, I want to get to some of the details in there. Now, we've already covered it as we record this podcast. You've already done your news conference. Stories have been written, but I do want to cover some of it. But before we go on, I want to hear why now. I mean, if the budgeting process has been going on this way for decades, you've been in the legislature since 1990, correct?
Yes.
So why are we changing now? I mean, it seemed did it all of a sudden the wheels fall off, and or this has been something you've been concerned about for a while?
I've been concerned about for a while, and this is the first time I've been in the top leadership role in the Senate, and can really be more active in charting a course. And truly, the economy is not as stable now as it used to be. We're in a time of transition economically to a technology society. We are now competing with jobs internationally, with Mexico, you know, with India, and we're in an economic transition. The money is not coming in like we thought. In my area of the state, in Wichita, we've lost thousands of manufacturing jobs, and it's more important for stability to have a separate legislative look to that budget. It hasn't been as necessary up till now. You know, we don't have a full-time legislature, but with these deficits and projections and with the money not coming in as expected, we need different sets of eyes analyzing that budget and looking for savings and looking for a fair tax policy.
Do you think that the governor has failed? You're close to him, and now you seem to be saying that, well, the governor and his staff, Department of Revenue, Legislative Research, which who does not answer to him but is independent, seems to not be able to do the job and the legislature has to step in. Is that what you're saying?
Essentially, yes. The legislature has to step in. And we're in this situation because we spent down our reserves, our savings account, and so we had no reserves. So when we got the news on Monday that we're $45 million short for just September, we are underwater right now. So
the legislature has to ride to the rescue? I mean, some people are going to be incredulous by that.
Well, my goodness, we're elected, and there's a shortfall, and we better get engaged. And it will take more time. As you know, Sam, legislators make about $10,000 a year, yeah, and they work all year long. Right now, these candidates, they are knocking on doors, and people are frustrated. We need economic stability. We need economic predictability. The bad news about Kansas, I think, prevents businesses from moving here.
Yeah. Barb, I see a whole pad of notes here, and I demand to know what's in them.
Oh, lots, all kinds of things. Some of it's about you. But if I could just back up a little bit on the tax cuts and the legislature. This 2012, when you took the vote on the tax cuts, mm-hmm, and I think you voted for them.
Yes,
right?
I did.
And then it was that year that a conservative majority came into both chambers of the legislature. And really, conservatives have been in charge ever since. And I'm wondering if you can kind of look back at it and tell us, you know, what you think about, what went wrong? Because obviously you voted for this and there were promises that this was going to be a shot of adrenaline to the Kansas economy.
I can tell you the inside story.
What's the inside story?
The inside story is first of all, back at that time, we were a very high tax state. As far as all our surrounding states, the top tax rate was 6.45. I had a lot of wealthy people in my community that once they retired, they moved because we were the high tax area, and most of them moved to zero tax states. But when you look at bringing in your retirement every month, and in Kansas, the state's taking 6.45 and in other states it's taking zero, people moved. We lost the wealth. We lost all the money they put into their communities. Our analysts said that, you know, at 3.5, they don't move. You know, they send it, you know, but at 6.45, people move. So we were losing wealth by being the high tax area in the nation. So I agreed with moving to taxing less productivity, mm-hmm, and putting more of that burden on sales. The moderate leadership who had worked with Kathleen Sebelius didn't want to move that direction. They took the pay-fors out of the bill. We had we kept the penny sales tax that Sebelius, we wanted to keep the penny sales tax that Sebelius had enacted to pay for those cuts The moderate leadership in the Senate took that penny out. And the other thing that happened with that plan was that when we had hearings, we were told all income would be taxed at the appropriate rate. So those that were making more income would be taxed at the high rate, lower income would be taxed at the low rate. All income would be taxed. We also thought that bill was going to go to a conference committee and be negotiated. It never went to conference. The governor signed it. And the unintended consequence with that bill was that one group of individuals who happened to be small business owners, because of the way the bill was written, went to paying no income tax. When we were told in committee that everybody would pay income tax.
Yeah, well, how did that happen? Because that seems to be the big glitch. I mean, one of the big glitches in this whole thing. How did it happen that so many businesses became exempt, and you have certain Kansans not paying income taxes and other Kansans paying income taxes?
Well, we untied ourselves from the federal tax code. You know, the federal tax code is 70,000 pages deep, okay? And so what we were in an economic slump, we were in a downturn, and our goal as a legislature was to tax income fairly across the board. All Kansans would have an income tax, and we wanted to take those small businesses and take their profits and leave them tax-free so that their profits could be reinvested. Their profits could hire more people. Their profits could lease a bigger space, you know, buy equipment in Kansas and grow. That was the goal. All the testimony in 2012 said tax income at the same rates, and these profits we were going to allow to go untaxed so they could be reinvested back in Kansas. These are all Kansas businesses. And tax law is extremely complicated to write. And if I can show you the testimony that said all income would be taxed, and we found out about a year and a half later, the owners of those businesses are not paying income on the money they're taking out to use personally for living expenses.
Well, but Susan, that given that, why has it taken so long to come up with this plan? I mean,
because
you knew it wasn't working. You said it wasn't
working.
We
knew it wasn't working. We looked at that bill last year, and the people who benefited from that plan, once they've been given that break, they lobbied heavily against the fix.
Who's they?
The business community.
You mean the Chamber of Commerce, the State Chamber of Commerce? Because there's a lot of, I've interviewed a lot of small business people. I, in fact, benefit from the LLC loophole with my little bit of freelance income. And if you were to interview me, I would say, I need to pay some state income tax. So, I mean, so
I
it was really the state chamber that was really driving this, correct?
Right. They were the ones who handled the hearings, and they were the most prominent entity that was
right.
opposed to it. And, Sam, I have a lot of business owners in my community.
You're a business owner.
I'm a business owner. And I'm a C-Corp. I don't
right.
have any LLCs.
You did not convert over.
No, but my tax attorney told me that I could have created an LLC
you
that
sure
managed
could
have. The C-Corp.
A lot
I could
of people
have put the
have.
Profits
yeah.
in the LLC and
yeah.
got out of it. Okay, but okay, so the situation is now I do think there are a number of small business owners who are saying, Susan, I'm paying zero and I'm willing to pay something. And they see what's going on around them. They see that there's a hole in the budget, and they say, I'm willing to pay something to help make this work. Mm. I love Kansas.
Right. And that's what this plan, your plan, the one that you, as well, we sit here, the one you announced yesterday.
No, all options are on the table. I didn't say we're going to go with a specific plan. What my caucus says is that we want the lowest tax rate possible. Mm-hmm. We want the greatest base. We want a broad-based tax plan, and we want a fair tax plan. All options are on the table. Mm-hmm. And so I think certainly that will be looked at last year, but what my caucus said is we're going to sign up to follow these principles. Mm. A tax plan that's broad-based, that's at a low rate, and that's fair.
Mm. Let me just go back for a second before we move forward and say, you clearly knew that you could have converted all your businesses over to an LLC or an S-Corp, and you didn't do it, so why?
Because I thought the tax law would change. It costs a lot of money to convert. Well, truthfully, I thought, you know, okay. Well, and first of all, I'm happy with the system I have, a C-Corp. And I could tell that probably the law might change in the future, so why do that?
That's sort of at the crux of what's going on, isn't it, this uncertainty? Because as long as that business tax loophole remains out there and it is a target, every year everybody's talking about it, and yet so far you haven't done anything. But it does create this climate of uncertainty. People really don't know how to structure their businesses or whether to create a business in Kansas or what's going on, right?
Right. The best entity that I understand or that you can create to protect yourself from personal liability, you have your business, you create an LLC because you're trying to protect, you know, if that company gets sued, you don't want them taking your personal home.
Right.
Okay. So,
well, that was the original intent of an LLC. Now, right. In Kansas, of course, one of the intents of the LLC is to avoid paying income tax.
Well, since people have figured out that they don't pay income tax, yes, that's correct.
Right.
We do have an entity that you can put your business in, and you won't pay income tax.
Right. Both the LLC and an S corp.
Right.
Right. A sole proprietorship, for that matter. Mm-hmm. But yet you choose to pay taxes, Susan Wagle. Is it because you're an exceptional Kansan?
No,
I'd like to
it's
think
because
that.
I'm a creature of habit, and I didn't want two sets of books.
Oh.
Why should I have two sets of books? That's a whole lot of work. I didn't mind paying the taxes in. So, I mean, it's a whole lot of work. It's structuring another entity, and then you have to move money around, and then you have two balance sheets, two income sheets. It's also a lot of work.
Okay.
So what are you and the other candidates hearing at the doors from constituents? You're tired of hearing about these deficits,
right? Put your house in order. And the truth of the matter is Kansans, they want the least expensive government possible. They want taxes low. They want an efficiently run system. You know, they aren't saying they want us to look at cuts first. You know, especially as Republicans, we believe in an efficiently run government, and we want a government that works. So what they want to do is they want us to look at first the budget. You know, where can we cut back on frivolous expenses? And then they want to make sure the budget balances. They're tired of the negative news. And they want a tax plan that's fair. They want a tax plan that, you know, as I said yesterday, John can live next door to Joe, and they both have the same job, but one of them's paying taxes, the other one's not. So they want a tax plan that's fair. They want a low tax rate. They want a tax plan that's fair. They want us to look for efficiencies. They want us to cut out the frills. They want that government to be the least expensive to accomplish the job, but they want it to be the least expense possible.
Are there any frills left in Kansas government anymore?
I think that there are.
Really?
Because we haven't really sat down with our agency heads and asked questions about how they're spending their money. The governor has a budget office. The governor has secretaries. He has the agencies. He holds them into accountability. I think it's time for the legislature to call in those same agencies and ask more questions about how money is being spent.
But you all commissioned an efficiency study,
yes,
right?
We did.
And what's the status of that right now?
This is a long-term project, getting the budget under control. A lot of the efficiencies that they recommended can be done without law. They can be done from the executive branch of government, like consolidating purchases so that you get better prices, if that makes sense.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, so
sure.
A lot of that efficiency study, some of it has to be the legislature. Most of it is executive in reaching out and finding those efficiencies through consolidation of agencies, better technology. You know, they were executive things that could be done through executive administration.
And is the executive branch moving on that rapidly enough, in
I'm
your
sure
opinion?
They are. Yes, they are.
Okay. They're working fast enough to your satisfaction?
They are. They're working at the plan. They're working on it. I mean, they don't like the news.
Mm-hmm.
They want to fix it, and they have the same goal we have, keep taxes low. Get the budget in balance. They're just as upset as we are about the collapsing income that isn't meeting expectations.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said everything is on the table. I think that seems to be the cornerstone of the plan moving forward, right? That you're willing to listen to anything that comes up to make sure to try to ail our
Correct.
Ailing. Ailing. So that would include perhaps, I'm not asking you to commit unless you want to, closing the LLC loophole. Right.
That will be one of the issues on the table. Yes.
Right. Would you consider raising the income tax back to either its previous level at the 6.45 or raising it up a little bit? Because even closing the loophole is not going to generate as much money as you may need. So is that on the table as well?
I think raising a rate, there's just not going to be 21 legislators that are going to go on a recorded vote and raise an income tax rate.
You don't think so?
No. And I also believe, Sam, that loophole, it's been projected to bring in $200 million. I think that loophole is going to bring in more money than expected.
How much more do you think?
Well, the truth of the matter is, not only the LLCs are paying zero, but rental income is at zero.
Farm
income is at zero, and production income is at zero. Mm-hmm. So by the time you take that type of income that's individually owned and you add that to the businesses that are not paying taxes, I think it will be more than the $200 million figure.
$300 million? Have you scratched this out on the back of an envelope?
No, I haven't scratched it out, but I've talked to a lot of people, and I think it will bring in more than that. It's going to take a few years to correct this this downturn that we're in, and to get it right.
Yeah, I want to move on to maybe a couple of other topics, but I want to wrap up and give Barb a chance to wrap up our tax discussion here. But so as I was looking at the list of folks who were standing with you yesterday as you were announcing your plan, it seemed a very heavy lift to me to get some of them to agree that everything is on the table, right? I saw, Ty Masterson is on the list. I saw Julia Lynn, LaTurner, Sullentrop. I mean, do you have all these people's assurances that they too, should they return, because we still have an election, but should they return, that they're willing to look at everything, including the LLC loophole?
Absolutely. I mean, this is a commitment to a guiding set of principles.
Mm-hmm.
And no one who is elected likes hearing the news every month that the money that we expected to come in is not coming in.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, all of them, you don't run for office in Kansas. This is not a congressional seat where you make a decent salary and you travel to Washington. And we are grassroots citizen legislatures. We do this for just little or no pay. And we run for office because we want to fix what's broken. And that team, my caucus, they want to fix the problem. And they're willing to roll up their sleeves and go to work and cast the votes that's going to take to right the ship. They're a great team to work with. And yes, they're very diverse. They come from all walks of life. They have very different experiences. But I believe it will be a very long session. I'm sure we'll go way over the 90 days because we have to do school finance, too.
Making some news here.
Oh, well, we're going to have a very long session. It's going to take some time to really thoroughly vet all possibilities and to walk out with a balanced budget. So, yes, it will be a long session, but they want to fix the problem. Universally, they are dedicated to making Kansas a great place to raise a family, grow a business, and they are just as concerned about the negative news as I am, as the governor is, as members of the House. They're a citizen legislature. They love this state. They care about this state, and they want to fix it.
I want to move on to some election topics, but Barb Shelley, your final thought on these on this tax?
Well, just
your final
question very quickly. Are you and is your caucus ready to break with Governor Brownback and go to the mat on tax issues if you need to?
I think we're walking into session in January as a Republican team, and I believe that as we work through session, we will be in close communication with the governor. And I think the governor wants it fixed just like we do. What we have to do is find 21, 63, and a governor, and all of us, in order to get there, have to compromise. Every one of us. Because, I vote for a lot of bills I don't like, but I do it for the team. I do that so that we can pass a budget. I believe Republicans will work together to solve the problem, and I believe we will be in close communication with the House, close communication with the governor, and we all want it fixed.
I just want to say 21, 63, and the governor is going to make a nifty bumper sticker, by the way.
That'd be a great bumper sticker.
No one will know what it means.
But... No, but that's not important. I think we'll enjoy it. Let me move on to the election and ask you. And you said that you don't think there's 21 votes in the Senate right now to raise the tax rate, the income tax rate in Kansas. It may be a very different looking Kansas Senate when you return. I think by many people's count, including ours, right now, I think you could make an argument that you've got 20 conservatives and 20 Dems and moderates just after the primary. Some people might disagree with that, but I think that there are those who could make that argument. And it's a pretty good chance that some of these incumbents, they have tough races, and you may not be looking at a conservative majority when you come back in January. So one, does that make it more difficult to get this plan through? And two, feel free to disagree with me if you think that conservatives are going to do better in November than I'm suggesting.
Let me first disagree with you with a 2020 analysis. Yes, there's 40 people in the Senate, but the Democrats don't vote for bills. They're the minority party. They don't have to vote for a budget. They don't have to vote for a tax plan. The Democrats are not going to vote to raise taxes. So there's not 21 to raise income tax rates. Because the Democrats will not, they didn't vote to cut taxes. When you're in the minority party, mm-hmm. you don't have to lead. You don't have to fix anything.
They'll still be in the minority party, but they're going to have a lot of allies with some new moderates in the Senate, correct?
The moderates who have won primaries are all, they watched what happened 4 years ago mm-hmm. when there was a small coalition of moderates and Democrats their intention was to block the income tax cuts entirely. They lost their seats in primaries, mm-hmm. and they don't want to lose their seat in 4 years.
Right.
My moderates say, Susan, I'm a Republican. I'm working within the Republican Party. I'm going to help you solve problems. We're going to be a Republican team. There will not be a coalition with the Democrats amongst the Republican moderates. I mean, the Democrats have, I've been there a lot of many years. The minority party doesn't have to vote for one bill. The minority party is better off always saying no.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I'm hearing you say, this is a pretty bold statement that, because this would fly in the face of, at least in Johnson County, what we've been hearing in the election, that there are, you know, and a couple of moderates who won their primary were not standing with you. They're not on that list from Johnson County.
I'd be now, glad this may- for you to call any of the moderates, because they'll tell you that they really like this plan and they like the principles that are involved in this plan.
So you're confident of a conservative majority?
A Republican.
Well, right.
I'm going to have a Republican majority that will
Nobody
solve
would disagree with
our
that.
Problems within the Republican Party. I mean, all the moderates and Democrats in 2012 voted no mm-hmm. on that tax bill.
Well,
Let me say, wait. They did vote for the final package, but they knew it was unbalanced. They sent the final bill, but they gutted the bill before they sent it to the House. They all voted, the conservatives, they gutted that bill, they gutted the pay fors before they sent it to the House, thinking the governor would never sign it. But it used to be that coalition existed, but the Democrats never, they didn't have to vote or lead on a tax plan or a budget plan. They don't have to do that. They're the minority party. All they have to do is point at us and say, you're doing the wrong thing. And that's what they do. They point the finger, but they have no plan.
But what we're hearing, at least in Johnson County, in campaign forums.
You don't have Democrats in Johnson County, Barb.
No, we have a lot of moderate Republicans.
Well,
yes,
we have
moderate
Republicans.
We have a lot of moderate
Republicans saying, we don't like what's been going on in Topeka, and we are going in there to change things.
Right.
Right. And we will team with Democrats if we have to, is the, I don't know, either
I don't think any of them
or implicit
have said that.
Message.
I've talked to them. We work together. We are a Republican mm-hmm. team. And they have all told me, Susan, we're going to find a solution within the Republican caucus. We're working with you.
Okay.
All right. I want to move on to another political issue. That is the retention of Supreme Court justices. The Republican Party, has taken a stand that they want four of the five Supreme Court justices who were on the ballot this November to not be retained. Where are you on that?
I haven't taken a public position. I can tell you my concerns about the Supreme Court. They told us last year that we need an equitable school finance plan. We agreed with them. We passed a bill. They didn't come in and say, this is what we're going to raise the amount of money that goes to schools by this amount. They looked at the Constitution. They looked at the wording in the Constitution. The role of the Supreme Court is to determine whether or not a law that is passed is constitutional, that it fits within the state constitution. In the past, this Supreme Court has voted and demanded a specific amount of money be spent on schools. And at that point, I believe it is an activist Supreme Court. When a court, when an unelected appointed court comes out and spends taxpayer dollars, that's an activist Supreme Court. And that bothers me about this court. And if they come out next year and say that a legislature, you have to spend hundreds of millions of dollars on education, that's overstepping their authority. Their role, as in other states where school finance has been taken to the court, their role is to determine whether or not our law is constitutional. It is not their role to tax, to spend, and to appropriate. It is the elected representative's role and the elected governor to spend taxpayer dollars. So this court has exceeded its authority in that instance in 2004. And if they do that again, as they consider school finance, I believe it will be an overreach of their role as a state justice.
But the court is not just coming out of the blue and getting involved in school finance, right? There's plaintiffs in the case, and they are local school boards.
That's right.
Right? So, I mean, if a case is brought to the court by plaintiffs, they have to do something, right?
Yes, and they can rule on the constitutionality of the state law.
But what you're
but
really
they cannot appropriate
they
money.
They can rule our way, and then we'll be happy with them and won't call them activist judges.
Well, I don't think that decision is going to come down until after the election. So,
I don't think anybody. Right. I believe that it'll come after the election.
Right.
But the issue, and there's another issue that I want to cover with the Supreme Court. But I just want to follow up on this and say, so if a court decides that something is unconstitutional, courts are empowered to come up with a remedy. I mean, it does no good to say, well, your law is unconstitutional. Now you can
the
do whatever you want.
The remedy has to be in the words. The remedy can't be by appropriating state taxpayer dollars.
That's exactly what they did with equity. They left it up to the legislature to come in.
They didn't come in with a specific amount of money. They didn't
tell
us how to get it from the balance from the state treasury. But clearly that's been an overreach. And of course, I'm from Wichita, where they have overturned every death penalty that most courts have handed down. So that's why my community is very upset with this court, because of the Carr brother murders, that they overturned that death penalty. And we had to go to the Supreme Court, spend a lot of money to get our court back in line. So to me, they have overstepped their authority as a justice judicial system.
You think the Carr brothers case is going to resonate and death penalty in general is going to resonate outside of Sedgwick County?
I don't know. It resonates in Sedgwick. But it's close to home there.
Right.
I remember that morning turning on the news and it happened in my district. And so, I mean, you do have to question the court when they're consistently overturning death penalties, and then we take them to the Supreme Court, and then the U.S. Supreme Court overrules our Supreme Court in Kansas. But now we cannot take school equity, because it's a state issue, to the Supreme Court. We cannot litigate that elsewhere. That's a state issue. It can only be litigated in the state of Kansas.
So you told me that you haven't taken a public position on the retention election, but it sure sounds like you have.
Well, I do have a personal opinion. I do believe that, they're watching this unfold too. They know that if they come down with a ruling like they did in 2004 for hundreds of millions of dollars, that there could be a rebellion, because if we would abide by that ruling, they would be forcing a huge tax increase. And ultimately, what do people vote? How do Kansans vote? They vote their pocketbook. And they're going to go back to that. This is a populist movement that we're in with Trump being the nominee of the Republican Party. And people vote their pocketbooks. They're upset about the economy. They're upset about not having the job opportunities that they had years ago. And you know what? Ultimately, they vote their pocketbook.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to give the last question to Barb Shelley, but first I need to get you on the record. You voting for Trump?
Yes.
Barb Shelley, your last question before we wrap up with Susan Wagle.
Well, it's going to be hard to top that last question of Sam, so I think I will not even try.
Okay.
Barb Shelley passes.
Passes.
Okay. This has been terrific. Barb Shelley, my brand new colleague here at KCUR, thanks for being here, also writes for The Pitch. Susan Wagle.
Thank you for the invitation.
Oh, my God.
Hope I can
thank
come
you.
Back.
Oh, you can.
Okay.
But you have one more task. This is where we turn the podcast over to you, my friend, and you pick our walk-off music. What song is going through your head?
Well, since a number of people here at this station are from Pennsylvania and I'm from Pennsylvania, we'll pick a Billy Joel song called Allentown. I was born in Allentown. Okay, it's a little dated, but it's a fun song.
Our first Billy Joel, and it's surprising me to say that, our first Billy Joel pick, outstanding pick, Susan Wagle. Statehouse Blend is produced by Matt Hodapp. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you enjoy getting your podcasts. Our friends over there at UpToDate, they make a little room for us every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Are you big fans of the Twitter? I'll bet you are. You can follow me. I'm at Sam Zeff. Follow my co-host, Brian Ellison. He's at PTS Brian. I'm Sam Zeff. I'll see you around the radio. It's on the Jersey Shore.